Good afternoon, Montreal. Rick McConomy, how are you today?
Wonderful. Ready to go. Hot medium here, radio. Let's go. Let's get
you
it
know,
going.
Once in a while, I actually think that people are listening. When we started this show and we were talking about doing advocacy radio and getting you people stirred up about things other than the normal sycophantish palaver that the politicians feed out, a lot of people told us nobody is going to care. So I was gratified this week when we actually got a ton of mail about some of the stuff we've been dealing with, and I just want to read a couple of letters that are going to touch on some of the themes we're going to deal with today. One is from Jean-Claude, who writes, I listened to your show and I've spoken to you on two occasions on the air. We live in a country that's abandoned values for something called culture, and the only war that we have won over the last 50 years is the war on guilt. We live in a country that subscribes to nothing. You may need to remind your listeners of what Gordon Sinclair once broadcast about America, just so that they remember that real freedom may be too expensive for the average Canadian. The next time a World War II veteran in Quebec wants a flag on Remembrance Day, he shouldn't need to make a federal appeal to get one. Taxation without representation started a long time ago here, and as long as the immigrants that settle in this country want to have cultural rights that they don't have at home, and that a Canadian identity is simply a notion or an understanding of the NHL and its playoff formula, this is what one gets. I suggest that all Canadians who spend their hard-earned loonies and toonies on vacations to Cuba should look in the distance and see families building rafts from debris so they can escape tyranny and ask themselves, why are we supporting a government that imprisoned thousands who just wanted basic human rights? The do-nothing Canadian way is a long-standing tradition and one that will last long after the social and economic collapses that are forthcoming. That is, of course, unless you and people like you can wake up all the damn politically correct and the blue-collar workers from their desires to have government and government agencies take care of them from the cradle to the grave and relinquish all personal responsibilities to the elites we elect into office. Integrity and morals is a way of life, and the right to dream about a better future for all requires sacrifices. Merci, Jean-Claude, and I hope people are listening. On our show on smoking rights and general rights, just want to read you two short excerpts from letters. One is from Fred. Business is being ordered to allow or disallow smoking is still an infringement on the right of the business operator to make his own decisions. Rights and freedoms used to be inherent. Those inherent rights and freedoms have been rescinded, and now all we have is more and more legislation that in every instance reinforces the subjugation of the population and increases government control. We should instead be seeking a return to a system of governance that recognizes inherent rights and freedoms, a system that only imposes universally applicable laws and enforces those laws equally and fairly. And we're going to talk about some more of this right after this message. Montreal, we're back. We've been joined in studio by the parliamentary group's Patrick Gagnon, former MP. Hi, Pat. Welcome.
That's always a pleasure, Beryl.
You're running for the leadership, by the way?
No. As how many
sure?
more liberals to go?
You sure?
Are there a sufficient number of them? I thought you were.
I was going to check with you and Rick first.
Well, I thought we were all part of your cabinet.
Well,
that's it.
I think we should do this. How about a train ride from Quebec City to Windsor, and we just get it on with the people?
I think it's a good idea, but, you know, you got to put the people in the buses and move them from station to station.
Yeah, but we could do that. But, you know, I'm particularly grouchy this week. I mean, you know, we had the Edmonton Love-In. Is anybody talking about anything real? We had the Edmonton Love-In, and we had, of course, the Court of Appeal in a record time reversing Paul Coffin's sentence responding to yellow journalism. And, of course, now we've had the great Michel Audet governance plan that calls for 50% female representation on boards of directors. What that has to do with governance, I don't know.
10 years from now, we'll need to have a guarantee of 50% male representation on.
Well, that's only if the males are one-legged and of certain, you know, other.
I got news for you, baby. When you put the women in there, they outperform the men more
it's
often.
It's been a nagging week, you know, and thank God we're going to have Bill Watson on. McGill Economist was talking about the nonsense behind Kyoto.
Well, liberals do need a woman
care.
Candidate, though.
What?
We do need a woman candidate, a serious woman candidate for this upcoming campaign.
We do. I mean,
Belinda's gone.
Oh,
where's,
it's true. Right.
Where's Sheila Copps?
Yeah.
I went to her Love-In 2 weeks ago.
I think they should go to the Canadian women's hockey team. The Canadian women's hockey team is where they should recruit the leadership candidate. Besides, do you know anybody that isn't running for it?
But Rick, what values would the hockey players bring? Remember, liberals love values and vision.
They have equipment, okay? They have focus, okay? They have, like, three times
20
minutes.
Are they going to talk nice to the Canadian people and not make them upset?
They'll perform instead of talking.
A little time in opposition do them some good.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they'll cool off a bit.
Yeah.
Well, our first guest today in a chat with me before we got him onto the program, used a wonderful expression, guys. He said, society's off the rails. And it's a pleasure to welcome again civil liberties lawyer, Canada's leading constitutional expert, Julius Gray. Julius, good morning.
Hi.
Morning, Julius.
Yeah, good morning.
Julius, society's off the rails. I mean, two examples of which, a stunning time, this coffin decision reversal. What was that all about?
Well, I'm very disappointed. I think it's just another coffin, if I can use a bad pun, and a nail in the coffin of our decent criminal law. Look, the man has refunded what he has taken. He is not a criminal. He's not going to commit another crime. To put him in jail appears to me to be contrary to all criminological principles. That's why the 50s and 60s and 70s changed our criminal law. In order to put people in jail for that sort of thing, we're going to have to be building prisons. We're going to be wasting human resources, human potential. There are other ways of punishing people. And
is this really a response to to almost yellow journalism calls for gratuitous cannibalism? And should Canadians be concerned that their vaunted and beloved independence of the judiciary may not be quite so independent?
Well, I think you have to remember that the connection between the courts and society is not as direct as that. It's not a response to yellow journalism. It's just that the courts are inside the society, and I guess they gradually move in a direction. And there has been this new, since 1990, an atmosphere of meanness, of imprisonment. But remember, society is generally corrupt. We've now learned over the, since 1984...
Wait a minute, Julius, you got to repeat that. Most Canadians won't believe it. Society is generally corrupt.
Since 1984, we've learned that...
We're in Canada. You're not allowed to say that.
All of them relatively corrupt. And what we do all the time is we choose a middle guy and make him the scapegoat for all of this. This is exactly what's happening. I'm not telling you the courts did that.
Le bon commissaire.
I'm telling you that in all of our society, what we are doing is lowering the real moral principle of equality. That's nowhere there. And if you have any doubts, take a look at the New York Times today, which tells you that in the last 15 years, the pay of the top executives has become 100 and something times as big as that of the average worker when it used to be only.
That's correct. In North America, the spread is actually 300 to 1 versus Asia, which is 20 to 1, and Europe, which is 40 to 1.
Profoundly unequal and profoundly unjust. And then what we do is we come down like a ton of bricks on somebody who really presents no risk. We want to send messages to people and do all sorts of things when, in fact, a more merciful and at the same time a financially difficult penalty would have been a far more effective, both as a penalty and as a better use of human resources. Because Mr. Coffin can do things; he can contribute to the society. There's just no point being brutally symbolic about this. So I don't believe that it's a direct response to journalism or anything like it. I believe it is a sign of our society, and courts are part of a society like anything else, moving towards a more, I would call it, a less sophisticated view of crime and punishment.
And isn't it a tragic commentary that the name Coffin once again appears in the annals of Canadian criminal law?
Yeah.
Coffin case of the 1950s where a man got hung apparently to make an
encouragement. A Gaspé prospector.
I think one of the problems is that so many people in our society are totally convinced that society is just and good and that it occasionally makes an inevitable mistake. And if we look at the annals of our criminal law, we will become very careful not to punish too hard because the number of errors the other way, in other words, the number of errors inflicting punishment on the innocent is as impressive as the number of errors letting off the guilty.
We have come to the point where we've institutionalized it by having basically a full-time operation in Ottawa, if I understand correctly, that basically goes into the injustice and the errors of the criminal law system.
So we've had a Court of Appeal decision in record time that makes every Montrealer and every Canadian feel politically correct. And right after this break, we're going to discuss with Julius another strange bit of political correctness from the Liberal government. We'll be right back after this. Talking about some of the nonsense that went on this week. And in studio is Rick McConomy. We're joined by special guest Pat Gagnon of the Parliamentary Group. Online with us is Julius Gray. And we're now going to be talking about another strange decision of political correctness. Julius, the Odette governance plan for Quebec seem to be going all right as far as separating the board of directors from the people that run the show, but then they stuck in there this 50% requirement of women. Now, well, what is this affirmative action on Crown Corporation? How do you enforce that?
It's asininity. Remember, this comes from a government that is anything but egalitarian, that wants to cut taxes so that the distance between rich and poor increases, that wants to bring the private back into Medicare and so on. And this government suddenly becomes holier than thou on equality, saying we've got to have 50%. Like some, you know, occasionally happens that that type of nonsense, you see it on the left.
But why only women?
You've got to have 50% women candidates, maybe a certain number of ethnics, etc. It's a growing tendency to decide that we need people are to be named or positioned for what they are rather than for who they are. You need a woman, you need a black man, you need a white man or whatever, and you're going to be going according to your needs, as though these categories were somehow firmly different from each other. In other words, as though you could expect a different contribution from a man or a woman, and therefore you need an equal number of each. You know, as though you were making some chemical and you had to put half of this thing and the other of the other. It's absolute nonsense. The other thing, of course, is that it's total injustice, because what it means is that you do away with the injustices of the past by creating a new one. Obviously, to reach 50%, you will practically say for the next 4 or 5 years, men need not apply. But that's ridiculous. That's precisely the type of thing that leads to disaffection, that creates...
But in Quebec, of course, this is not new. I mean, we started in school funding issues, for example, with Catholic and Protestant schools. Now everybody wants the same amount of money.
Yeah.
And what are they going to do? Just write a blank check to every group that screeches?
It's not a question of writing a blank check. It's a question of refusing to see the uniqueness of each individual, the fundamental, the nature of equality, which takes into account that uniqueness and perhaps the special needs of each individual, and the need for social justice. Instead of social justice, we're getting this sloganizing, and it's all purely, in my view, for electoral reasons, to be able to do a one-upmanship, and that's how...
For the next dépliant.
Yeah, but it's an absolute and total injustice. It will do. It will not be good either for women who are named because they know that for the next 3 years it's only women, nor will it do any good for men who are frustrated and angry because they don't even have a reasonable chance.
Julius Gray, you fought your whole life for the sovereignty of the individual over any state diktat or collectivity. Do you ever get disheartened when you see courts and government just pandering to political correctness?
Well, I think in the last 15 years, things have been going in the wrong direction. I must tell you that I thought throughout the 60s, 70s, 80s that we were going in the right direction, sometimes too slowly, sometimes too fast. We did all sorts of things that were very wrong. But nevertheless, the move was in the right direction towards a greater realization of the value of the individual and the need for social justice, because it's two things. It's not just you don't want sort of 19th century individualism, the social justice is there. But since 1990, we have kept all of the silly notions of equality, in other words, having in quota systems and so on, and we've given up on social justice. And there's nothing more dangerous than notions of equality without social justice, and than forgetting the fundamental moral ground for equality, which is the uniqueness of the individual, not of groups. It doesn't matter if the person who comes to see you is of Italian or French-Canadian or Jewish origin. You look at the individual all the time.
How do you fight something like this, particularly the Odette proposal?
Well, I think you have to ridicule the Odette proposal. It's a sudden Johnny-come-lately on the field of equality, but in the worst possible way. I mean, even in affirmative action in the United States, when there really was a group that was way behind and that needed some, nobody's ever proposed strict quotas. And this is nonsense. And I think until Quebecers learn to laugh when proposals like that come out, we're going to get them. Because before elections, governments like this one, for instance, that have achieved absolutely nothing in any other way, are going to have to look for things that they have done.
Julius, please hold the thought. Montreal, we want to hear from you. Are you waking up to the political correct bullshit that we're being sold? And we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, Montreal. In studio with me is Rick McConomy, special guest Pat Gagnon of the Parliamentary Group, and we've been just talking with Julius Gray. And the issue today is, how much political correctness are we willing to swallow? We've just finished talking about the Coffin decision, the appeal court reversing in record time The debt governance plan.
And I'm not sure we would have got to 28% with the old boys club naming each other to every bloody board around the place. I think there's been some stirring of the pot, and I think that's what the 28% is all about. We don't need the 50. A debt's full of BS. But frankly, the 28 wouldn't have happened unless somebody went and pushed them.
Who do you think that was?
Oh, it was me. It was me.
Personally.
It was other guys. It was Gagneau who's sitting
on
here with
Sunday,
us today.
I'm all ears.
You're right there.
Well, you'll make Montrealers happy. They want to hear political correctness. Canadians apparently love that stuff.
Yeah, but you don't stop women from getting on boards because you think it's politically correct. Okay, you take quality women, and they will outperform the men in many, many occasions. And I think we should be naming quality women and quality men. Forget the percentages. Forget all of this.
Montreal, we want to hear from you. Are you buying this politically correct bullshit from the courts and from the government? Or do you understand really what's going on? Now we've done, we'll go to another level right now. Joining us on the phone is the Hill Times columnist Angela Persicelli. How are you, Angela? Thanks for taking time off on Sunday to join us.
It's my pleasure, as usual.
And we're going to talk about another level of political correctness. This has been Stephen Harper's first week in Parliament, but let's start first, Angelo, and Pat, please, you're free to join in on this. Angelo, this Liberal leadership race, I watched the Edmonton love-in. Now, Angelo, you know me a little bit. You know my stomach was turning. I mean, how could you have 10 people licking each other without one of them talking about one bloody piece of policy and what's wrong with this country and how to fix it?
A phone book of candidates.
What is going on?
Well, that shows that the Liberal Party is in trouble and shows that they have no idea how to fix it. They are just going around trying to find a solution, and I don't believe that they had found one.
Angela, but am I wrong? I mean, here you have Ignatieff, who was the man of ideas, and you had Ray, and you had Jared Kennedy, who came up with that brilliant law in Ontario, that if you don't stay in school till you're 18, you're almost a criminal. Nobody talked ideas. It was just, I love you, and I promise not to say a bad word against any of our candidates.
Well, I wouldn't characterize the debate, what they had yesterday. It's just a get-together of the Liberals trying to find, as I was saying before, the way to solve their problems. Everybody's saying in the last few months that the next Liberal leadership is going to be based on ideas, and they want something, they want to look towards the future. Well, I believe that they might have brilliant ideas. Definitely we didn't see them up to now. But even if they have, the leadership is going to be won by whoever has the best organization. If you look at the system, they are going to elect the next leader, only the person with an organization. And Belinda Stronach was quite clear when she dropped out this week. She said that, she didn't say that openly, but everybody was there for understand. And if you don't have an organization, you are not going to win. And if you look at the...
Angela, this is a very important point. We're getting close to a break, but I want to get back onto this point. The press and the media have been focusing on the lower levels of spending that you can do. They've been focusing on the fact you can become a member online, but they missed the fact that there's a July 1st membership cutoff that allows the old crowd to control the convention. Angela, please stay with us. We'll be back right after this. Montreal, we're back. Are you tired of political correctness? Let's hear from you. Can you smell the bullshit? Can you even understand what's going on? Rick McConaughey in studio with me, special guest parliamentary group's Pat Gagnon on the line with us from Toronto, The Hill Times, Angela Persicelli on the Liberal leadership race. Angela, let's get back to this critical point that too many have missed. The press focused on the fact that, well, the Liberal Party must be reforming because you can't spend $10 million like Paul Martin did. You can only spend $3.5 million, and you can become a member online now, so you can't fill out a form in hard copy that the apparatchiks at the party hold in their drawer till the 89th day before the convention, and then you can't vote. But they forgot that they closed membership July the 1st, which means that you've only got like 2.5 months to sign up members, and you're basically speaking to the old Martinites who are still the president and executive director of the party.
Martin or a puppet of Martin. That's what's going to be going down.
Well, we know the Liberal organization the way it was. Liberal Party had the best political organization in Canada. It was centralized, but with franchises around the country. So basically they were
like
local.
Like a McDonald's.
McDonald's. It was a central organization, but was locally owned, but they were all directed from the top. Now the top doesn't exist anymore, and the people that had the franchise, they are on their own. Yeah. So that's the problem they have. They were used to say, okay, let's put two or three people on the top. They are going to run, and they are going to win. Now they have realized, and I know that the McKenna, Brian Tobin, and the others decide to drop out for many reasons, but one of it is that they didn't have an organization behind them.
Pat Gagnon,
Angelo, I'm listening to you. I think this is a great time for regeneration and renewal, and I think that time in opposition should be more than just a couple of months. Frankly, a couple of years will do good to the Liberals to sit back and see how things go.
I think it's
important to talk about the franchisees. Having been a franchisee and unhappy with the returns that I got out of the Liberal Party of Canada at the time, the people at the top are going to start listening to the people on the bottom, with the very few that we have left in Quebec. So I think the next leader is going to have to respond more to Quebec and more to the rural areas and come up with a definitive plan beyond the pie-in-the-sky promises made by Paul Martin and his gang and the 46 or 56 promises that they were, and probably go back to a more concise level, like Harper and his five promises, which are catching on with regular
but
Canadians.
Let's get back,
and that's what the Liberals need.
But let them take 4 years to do it. Let them take four years.
Let's get back to the race right now. This image of the Liberal Party renewing itself now that they've tried to sell. What about this July 1st date? Why a 45-day, 65-day membership period?
Because they're not committed
to
change.
In order to win, you need an organization for 2 months and a half. If you don't have a lot of people working for you, you are not going to recruit many supporters.
So, Angelo, Pat, you're insiders. Who's really going to be running the show?
I think Paul Martin could still be running the show.
Angelo,
no,
what do you think?
So. I don't think so. Paul Martin has lost his organization. The people that were organizing for him are completely left out. And the so-called lieutenants who's in charge, for example, of the organization?
Good question.
In Quebec, what you have to understand is the federal Liberals always relied on provincial organizations. And in this case, in Quebec, it's always been the provincial Liberals, the Jean Charest Liberals, the Bourassa Liberals, and others. And this time, Charest is not going to support, and that organization is not there.
You mean the Jean Charest Conservatives?
Exactly. Now, we stand corrected, and that's why he's drumming up a very good relationship with Mr. Harper, and Mr. Harper's going to make serious inroads in the province.
Two ex-ministers in the Mulroney cabinet. I mean, all we need is add Bouchard into the thing. We got all the ex-ministers from the cabinet.
So is that the new Canadian political gestalt? You get to be a member of every party at every stage in your life.
You just got to be patient and go long enough.
Angelo, is there a future in this bunch? That was very eloquent, by the way.
what we can say that there are old liberals and they are saying that they are not good. There are new liberals and they don't trust.
They mean three new liberals.
So what are they telling us? What do you hear? I mean, what's the message?
Other than the usual
platitudes.
The Liberal Party opened up the doors to everybody looking for a place in the sun.
Looking for a
job.
So
they were going from the left to the right, from outside Canada. Everybody was going there, and they are called the tourists in the Liberal Party. And they are blaming them for many of the problems that the Liberal Party had to go through. So what we see that the old guards, and I have to say that most of the old guards in the Liberal Party at the present time running are maybe related to ethnic groups, or there are people that they cannot control. So that's why they are opening up. You have a lot of people to create a lot of confusion, hoping that they can pick up the right card at the right time. So that's why I see a lot of confusion. And in my opinion, it's going to win the person that is a cool mind and that can have a good organization regardless of the ideas, even though they talk about ideas. But ideas with this kind of organization, that they are going to be so busy trying to get people up to July the 1st. And then, even then, you have to vote for the super weekend at the end of September, beginning of October, and you need a slate of 12 people in 308 ridings. You basically
the perfect profile for a party almost permanently in opposition. They'll represent everybody and they'll represent nothing.
So that's if they want new ideas, they have to change the system. And
part of that system is changing the is getting
a new leader,
but also you need members. You can't raise. You can't speak to the old members that are loyal to the old crowd with an executive director of a party and a president of a party who still belong to the old leader, who, if an election is called in November, may end up, as you said off the air, as the current leader, and nobody has enough time to raise enough members, and that's the hidden agenda of the old guard of the Liberal Party.
The reality is that nobody's willing to organize its own funeral.
Well put.
Well put.
I'm stealing that line, Persicelli, you know that, for my next column.
Well,
and
that's
stay with
it.
Us, and we'll discuss Prime Minister Harper right after this. Bonjour, we're back. In the studio with me, Rick Noconomy, Parliamentary Group's Pat Gagnon, and on the line from Toronto, The Hill Times, Angelo Persicelli, one of the most perceptive and perspicacious columnists on Capitol Hill. How do you like that, Angelo? I've been waiting to do that every time you're on.
I owe you a coffee.
That alliteration I've been waiting all the, for weeks. Angelo, we got liberals sitting in studio, can't say anything good about the liberals. We got a Canadian polity who doesn't, I don't think, knows what, whether they're coming or going. But I kind of think that Harper's performance for the first week in Parliament wasn't bad. What do you think?
I think that he performed very well. And I also want to tell you that I'm not surprised at all. I had the opportunity, and I had to meet Stephen Harper quite a few times privately, and had a private discussions. And I'm not surprised at all. I can say I know Stephen Harper, and he's going to surprise many people. He's not the cold person. He's witty. He's intelligent. He knows what he wants. He has a program, and he's not the nasty person eating children that liberals trying to sell to Canadians during a couple elections.
I absolutely agree, and I've had the chance to speak with him personally twice, and I fully agree with what you're saying about him. But a lot of people say that. Have hopes for Ignatieff as being sort of a liberal Harper, but are you seeing any of that, or is Ignatieff doing the politically correct liberal routine right now?
No, I don't think so. The only thing we can say that both of them are kind of quote-unquote academics, politically Harper. Speaking, Stephen Harper has been, first of all, he never left Canada. Stephen Harper has been involved in politics, whether you agreed with him what he did or not, but he was involved in politics, so he knows what's going on. And Stephen Harper is a person that has been involved in the rebuild of the Conservative Party, so he knows exactly what he's doing. Now, all of this, on the other hand, we have Ignatieff he has not been in Canada for a long time. He might be smart, he might be an academic, but you know, that means nothing. Otherwise, we go to university, we find the person that has the major, has the best curriculum, and we make him or her Prime Minister of Canada.
This is also strange. I mean, just a few months ago, people were talking about, Harper's obituary within conservative circles, and then suddenly, he's in government, he has a minority government, and now it's wonderful, it's great, but how long is that going to last? The same thing with the Liberals. We saw that with Paul Martin, it was his second coming, and it's been, it's been a disaster.
Harper came to places like Quebec, went into barbecues, into backyards.
Well, that's
his second election that he ran, not his first. The first one he
this
ran,
is
he
what
was
we
on
have
the
to
ground.
See. Can you get the Mavis Brown of the Ladies Auxiliary, who lives in Campton, New Brunswick, or Flin Flon, Manitoba, who will she support? And when you're looking at the Liberal leadership, which one amongst the federal leaders that we have there who can connect with the real people of this country?
Angelo, can anybody connect?
Is there somebody there?
Ignatieff is just like another Adlai Stevenson. He'll be up at that level and never get down.
Here goes McConomy. The Irish is up. Angelo, can any of them connect?
I don't believe that when we talk about connecting with a leader, we are talking about election. The leadership races are different. People are looking, the liberals were used to say, we vote for whoever makes us winners. They were winning with Jean Chrétien. They won three elections. They were leading in the polls, and they said no, and they kicked him out. The liberals were fighting against each other, even though their party was going down the tube in the last election. So winning, it's not anymore the key to elect the new leader in the Liberal Party. So what is it? And this is the key point. They are trying to find some kind of answers to this question. But in the meantime, the people that are going to win, in my opinion, are the people that handle the organization.
Angelo Persicelli, Hill Times columnist. Thank
My
you very
pleasure.
Much for your time on this Sunday, and we'll be right back after the news with Senator Condonino. Montreal, we're back. Rick McConomy in studio with me, special guest Patrick Gagnon of the Parliamentary Group, and on the line with us, Senator Consiglio Danino of Toronto. Con, how are you? Welcome back.
I'm great, and certainly greetings from
yes.
beautiful, sunny downtown Scarborough.
Good afternoon, Con.
I was about to mention that you got back safely from beautiful downtown Kiev. Senator Danino was part of the OSCE team overseeing the Ukrainian elections, and you came back well? You didn't get into trouble?
No. Hey, listen, I'm a good guy. Why would I get into trouble?
One never knows over there. I'm just happy you're well.
Or maybe I'm too nice a guy.
So, Con, Angela yeah. Persicelli says, about the Liberal Party, nobody wants to organize their own funeral. Gagnon's been doing a good job of whacking them. And everybody seems to agree that, Harper's not the devil incarnate. He did pretty good the first week in government, don't you think?
Why do you think they tried so hard not to have the government fall? I mean, they knew these folks are not stupid people. They knew that...
Which folks are we talking about? There's a lot of stupid people out there.
No. The guys that controlled the Liberal Party understood that if Harper got in, they'd have a huge problem trying to defeat him. And they're finding that out right now.
People are reacting, very positively to things that they haven't heard in a long time. Put aside the straight talk of the prime minister saying, things on Hamas and telling his foreign minister, look, no, we're not funding terrorist regimes. But when he says to reporters who ask him why they don't see him too often, he says, well, I'll see you when I have something to say. It's so refreshing. I mean, and Canadians are understanding that finally. You don't have to be afraid of being honest.
I think they're also probably understanding that, and we will see in the next few months, understanding that here's a guy that's going to tell you what he's going to do, and then he's going to do it. You know, we had a guy in Ontario that did that and did a hell of a great job. And
Bob Ray?
Harper, yeah.
That's Gagnon's humor.
Listen, that's the best thing that could happen to us conservatives if Bob Ray becomes the leader of the Liberals.
I hear he's going to run in his Ontario platform.
That's right, exactly. But you got a guy that said, in the spring session, I'm going to do these five things. And everybody's trying to derail him and say, what about this? What about that? And he said, look, do you remember what I said to you? In the spring session, I'm going to do these five things. And this is what his focus is, and this is what he's going to do. I mean, the speech from the throne, certainly, if there was any doubters, should understand that this man made a promise, and he's going to keep it. And that's what Canadians are seeing.
He seems to also...
They're not seeing the wishy-washy, liberal Mr. Martin.
Well, but before we go a little too far on that route, I mean, there's still the concept of other ideas that have to be expressed.
That's Pat getting a little squeegee here.
I mean, a little squeegee here in terms of, as... research and development and how we're competitive with the new emerging markets. And there's other big questions that were not addressed in the throne speech.
Well, that doesn't mean that they're not being dealt with, but he's going to make a priority. There are ministers who are working on all of those things, every single one of the things that Canadians are concerned about and we should be doing are being worked on and prepared in order that we can do it and do it right.
The point is we have a prime minister who has his priorities, is on message, and is not simply changing it every day based on a focus group saying, I'm very, very, very concerned about this because some focus group that David Hurley set up told him so. Con, stay with us. We're going to pay some bills. We'll be right back. Montreal, we're back. Rick McConomy in studio with me. Parliamentary Group's Pat Gagnon. 790-0006. We want to hear from you. What you think of the Harper government? What you think of the political correctness in Quebec? On the line with us, special guest Senator Condonino of Toronto.
Rick McConomy, I want to know something.
Can I finish?
Are you a candidate?
Am I going to be allowed to finish?
Are you a candidate for the leadership of the Liberal Party?
The people. He's asking this of everybody. He's stopping people on the street, Con. It's embarrassing.
I'm getting more yeses than nos.
Hey, listen, let me tell you something. It goes to show you how many real good people are looking at this. How many of the smart people are looking at this? Anyway, maybe that's too much of an insult.
No, Con, it's the nose. The Irish in McConomy, Con. I mean, they're just, he's walking around asking everybody. He thinks this is a party at a pub. Although, it may be, Rick. I don't know.
It's supposed to be a party.
Con, the prime minister has to get through the budget. He gets through the budget. Where do we go from there? How tough is it going to be with his budget?
I think the prime minister, as I said before, is going to keep his word. He's going to tighten things up. He has to tighten things up. These folks before, were spending your money and my money as if it was, really
like drunken sailors. Anybody who screeches loudest gets a check.
You open the tap and the money comes out. I think he's going to tighten things up, but I think he's going to do the kinds of things that need to be done to make sure that this country stays on the right track and to make sure that the people who need some help most will get it. But he's not going to give money to every single Tom, Dick, and Harry who comes in there and says, if you want my vote, give me money. And I think you're going to see in the next few months him saying, no, we're not going to give you money for your vote. We're going to do the kinds of things that people will look at us and say, there is a good government, and that's why you're going to vote for us.
Senator Condonina, we thank you very much for taking time out from a busy Sunday, and we wish you well, and we'll speak to you soon.
My pleasure. Keep well, and God bless.
Take
good
care, God.
See you in Ottawa.
Now we welcome William Watson. Bill, thanks for taking time out. How are you?
I'm well, thanks.
You're coming in a very good moment. I wanted to repeat what Senator Danino just said, that this is not going to be a government that simply writes a check to everybody who screeches. And for those of you who are not familiar with William Watson, he's not only a leading McGill economist and National Post columnist, but he is perhaps a repository of some of the last reason insanity there is in public discussion. Lately, he has tried to educate the public about things like daycare in Kyoto, and one of his finest lines is that the Quebec daycare model is a classic of the People's Republic of Quebec. Bill Watson, is that the problem with Canada over the past 13 years, that we've had governments, both at the provincial and federal level, who just wrote a check to anybody who screams the loudest for any stupid little program that has nothing to do with what government should be doing?
I don't know if it's the problem for the last 13 years. It might be the problem for the last 50 or 60 years. But, yeah, I think it's a problem. It's hard for politicians to say no, you know. And I think politicians want to do the right thing, but very often they find themselves in a situation where there's a big news story that's broken. There may be a great difficulty that people see, you know, natives have run out of clean drinking water. And the public says you got to help. In that kind of situation, it's difficult for a minister to get up and say, well, you know, I don't really think the government should be in charge of this problem. I think people should be in charge of their own drinking water. It lacks compassion. It lacks sympathy.
But has government
we don't
not
like
gotten,
people who say no.
But, Bill, has government not gotten away from their core responsibilities and replaced those core responsibilities, dealing with the political and distributive problems that are tough to deal with sometimes because they step on the toes of vested interests, and they just try to sell the public that they're doing something for them on things like Kyoto and daycare, which is suddenly a droit acquis. I mean, how many people understand that in Kyoto, under Kyoto, Canada's writing a $1.3 billion check to Russia this year so that our emissions have gone up, Russia's has gone down because their economy is tanking. They don't understand what bill of goods are being sold.
Yeah. Well, if you're running that kind of system, I actually like a deal where you can buy other people's credits, because it means that the country that can actually reduce its emissions most efficiently is able to do so and then sell its ability to, it has the right to pollute. You know, there's a certain limit on the number of tickets that you sell, but it's not using its tickets, so it sells them to somebody else. So I kind of actually like that sort of system. But, I think we've gotten used to the idea that we go to government when we have problems. And I think that's how do they say no? When they do try to say no, they get lots of people angry at them. If they say no enough, you know, we might get a 4 or 5% reduction in our taxes. I'd be delighted to have that. But if they say no to a group, that group is going to be mad as hell.
If they say no
to farmers are going to line up on Parliament Hill, as they did this week, and make a big stink. And farmers have the ability, they produce the kinds of stuff that really will make a big stink. And, I sympathize with the political animal who's in office and wants to do the right thing but doesn't want to be a pariah. You know, so I think it's up to us. We have to learn. I hope, the throne speech had five priorities, but as Andrew Coyne said, gusting to 12. There were other things that were in there apart from the five, and there are other things that the government clearly is going to do apart from the five. But I hope the body language of the government is that, there are limits. And people are thinking, well, five is, it's a nice round number, and it's not too big, and maybe we can't actually do five things. So that's good psychologically to get that message out there, even if there were more than five things in the throne speech.
At least we have the hope of government rolling back a bit. Pat,
it was actually a good essay, which probably would have gotten a B-plus or even an A-minus in one of your courses at McGill. But I think when you're talking about politicians, I think a lot more politicians are realizing there's nothing wrong about saying no. People have to understand that saying no is often for their own good.
I didn't hear no in the Martin administration too often.
Well, of course, the Martin, but I'm just talking about those. I'm locked. Politics is local, and I went through that in my own experience. And I can say this to others who might be listening, that at some point, saying no, you cannot go ahead for whatever reason. People have to understand, then you move on, and you move on to something else. And often, the electorate will accept that instead of being led on and saying, oh, well, maybe in the next budget, maybe after the next election, let us know now so we can prioritize and refocus our energies elsewhere.
And no, I think that's great, but
how do you deal with question period?
Well, we'll answer that right after that. We pay some bills. Bill Watson, please stay with us. We'll be right back. Montreal, welcome back. Email us at info@iapm.ca. In studio with me, Rick McConomy, the parliamentary group's Patrick Gagnon, and our special guest on the line, William Watson, McGill economist, National Post columnist. And Bill, we were talking about the Quebec model and how things work here. Any chance that you see in the future of rolling back the people's dependence on these 1,001 little programs?
Well, people have to come to the realization that they can't have everything. The great difficulty is, of course, that the Harper government wants to get popular in Quebec. Now, how does it do that? The Action Démocratique du Québec went kind of right-wing for a while. It may be coming back to the middle because that didn't work too well. But you got to persuade people that what's going to be good in the long run is that if they get to keep their own money and make more of their own decisions about how they're going to spend it. And it seems to be ingrained here that that's not the way things should be done. We have la collectivité, we have la solidarité, and the way we do things is to put all our money in a big pot and then let a deputy minister in government with the sometimes approval of the minister, sometimes not, go ahead and spend it for us.
Have we figured out yet how they got those seats in Quebec City? I mean, have we figured out yet what the attraction was?
Well, there are two Quebecs now. I mean, there's the urban Montreal Quebec and there's the rural Quebec, which is a completely different reality. And I think he's catering to that population, to that electorate.
Bill Watson?
Well, I think there were 13 years of Liberal government. People were tired and wanted a change, and there was that movement. And what happened was that the Conservatives signaled that they were going to be an effective alternative party, and they were going to do okay in English Canada. And therefore, there's no need to vote Bloc anymore because you're going to have a government that, in fact, is going to try to listen to your needs. So I wouldn't, one particular election has lots of things going on. I don't know if we can say that it's a big statement about ideological changes.
But it's great for Canada, great for federalism.
It seemed to me that Harper moved more than Quebec moved.
Yeah, but does it mean that, can we foresee, an increase? Is there growth there?
Yeah, I think there's probably growth there. I mean, they killed the Bloc for good.
Yeah, great news.
But enough growth to stunt what you beautifully call the People's Republic of Quebec model?
That's a long, slow project. I suspect it's going to happen when a lot of people retire and they become a real need for public expenditure and there just isn't any more to go around. When they start crowding out public spending, we're going to see that a lot of these little projects, in fairness, the provincial Liberals say that they've shut down, 110 different little government institutes. There's probably a couple of thousand more to go, but I think they've been making progress in that direction.
What's our bureaucrat ratio? We got
Ontario?
Four times the number of bureaucrats for one-fifth of the population of California?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised by that. I don't know if that's the exact number, but we do seem to have lots of them. Almost as many as we have potholes.
Now, that's a matter of popular culture. Now you're attacking the heart of the city.
No, I know, but it's a very basic thing that government should be taken care of is keeping the streets clean, undented, and safe. And they don't seem to be doing all that well on those. I'd get back to basics and focus on what people are really interested in, and then we can do all this more frilly stuff later.
Well, as an economist, how would you favor a tax strike by citizens?
Well, you start.
And you'll be next, or you're waiting for the top 10.
I'll be right behind you.
How far
your
behind?
Your lawyer's here, guys. Your lawyer's here.
Wait a minute. McConomy's ready. McConomy's ready to be number two.
I'll defend you guys to the end of
and
your
wire.
Incorporate.
That's it. Well, you know, it'd be nice, but it's a collective action problem, as we call it, in the university. You know, who's the first person over the top? The Canadians are very law-abiding, and we go a long way on that, and that's a good thing, generally, if you look at the long history.
It's generally a good thing. It's also a good thing to have law with the justice of equitable consideration. William Watson, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for taking the time on this busy Sunday.
Pleasure was mine. Talk
Thank
to you, later.
You, Bill. Take care. And, you know, you reminded me that one of the solutions may be to fill the potholes with bureaucrats.
One bureaucrat per
Covered with politicians.
There you go.
Talk to you later.
Take care, Bill. Montreal will be right back after the news. Welcome back, Montreal. Email us at info@iepm.ca. Rick McConomy with me in studio. Well, I think, Rick, we've beaten the shit out of Quebec, Montreal, and Ottawa.
I think we should go overseas.
Let's go to some places with some real problems.
Yes, yes.
In Israel and the Palestinian Authority, we've had signs, and I use that word cautiously, that the newly elected Hamas government is willing to do something as far as some semblance of recognition of the existence of the State of Israel, as if that still has to be discussed. And on the other side of the fence, Israel has just gone through elections, and they're trying to form a government. With us is foreign correspondent Noga Tarnopolsky from Jerusalem. Noga, welcome, and thank you for taking time out to
thank
be with
you.
Us. Noga, two questions. I think the first should be, have we got a government in Israel? And number two, what is this stuff about Hamas ready to talk because the EU and everybody else is cutting off aid? Is it real? Is it fake? And where's the story behind that?
Ready to what? I'm not sure I heard you.
Is it real? Is it fake? We've had headlines.
They're ready to do what?
Ready to talk.
To talk to Israel.
It's unclear. There are, I would say, very varied and mixed signals coming out of the Hamas representatives and the Palestinian government, in fact, right now. There were hints that were immediately denied that they might be willing to recognize Israel. I'm not sure what it would actually be worth if they recognized Israel because they were forced to due to a depleted bank account. But all of those rumors were immediately denied, and basically the new Palestinian Prime Minister, Ismail Haniyeh, has made it very clear that from his point of view, the number one goal of his government is the elimination of the State of Israel.
Is he taking orders from Khaled Mishal? Is he taking orders from Khaled Mishal in Damascus, who's the political head of Hamas?
Khaled Mishal. I don't know. I'm not sure who knows. Khaled Mishal was very present in the immediate days following the Palestinian election. Certainly, he had a lot of media presence. He's never been here, but has been pretty silent in the last few weeks. And I'm not sure it's entirely clear. It appears that Haniyeh is the one actually speaking with Mahmoud Abbas, who's the Palestinian president, who's from Fatah. But I'm not sure anybody fully knows, certainly outside of the government.
On the Israeli side.
More problems.
More problems. Government forming coalitions. Who's where now?
Well, let me just say first off that the government of Israel today took several actions. One is that the Ariel Sharon has been declared permanently incapacitated, and therefore, as of Tuesday, Ehud Olmert is going to be our full prime minister, unrelated to the elections. This relates to Israeli law, the basic law that states that a prime minister can only be considered temporarily incapacitated for 100 days. So we're reaching those 100 days from the January 4th stroke.
Stroke, right.
The other thing is that on his first day since that declaration was made, Olmert has declared the Palestinian Authority in its totality an enemy state. And
since the Hamas election.
Well, but that announcement of the government of Israel happened today. It's a result of the Hamas election, and anybody having contact with the Hamas government is going to be immediately boycotted by Israel. In the last few days, we've had the U.S. announced the cutting of funds, the Europeans. Today, the Palestinian Minister of Finance said that the situation is much graver than he even knew. So basically, we're sitting on a tinderbox.
Noga, stay with us. We just got some bills to pay, and I want to talk about the coalition building that's going on in Israel right now. Montreal, we're back. Rick McConomy in studio with me. Noga Tarnopolsky from Jerusalem discussing the situation both in the Palestinian Authority and in Israel. Noga, coalition building in Israel.
Yep.
How's it going?
Well, so far it's going slowly but quietly, I would say.
Who's talking to whom?
Kadima is talking so far.
Kadima is the centrist party.
Sorry?
Kadima is the centrist party, just for our listeners.
Headed by Ehud Olmert.
Right.
Started by Ariel Sharon. They're speaking with Labor, which is center-left, I guess I'd say, with a very serious social agenda that has absolutely nothing to do with exterior foreign politics, and interestingly with Shas, the more center-right religious party. Those are the two big conversations right now. Likud, on further on the right, headed by Bibi Netanyahu, seems to be entirely out of the picture for now.
We've heard that the Labor Party has been trying to form a coalition without and participation of religious parties. Any truth to that?
Yeah, vague truth, I would say. There are certain elements in the Labor Party that I think are dreaming of that possibility. It doesn't seem to be possible if you just look at the numbers. They're secularist type movements, streams within the Labor Party, but it doesn't seem that that's a possibility.
How much time have they got?
Or necessarily in the interest of Olmert, who has to keep an eye on his rightward flank.
Is there a deadline date by which somebody's got to form a coalition?
There is a deadline. I think it's in about 8 weeks, and it doesn't appear that it's going to be a major problem.
So meanwhile, it's the status quo for Olmert.
Yes,
and his administration.
Olmert's rise, worth mentioning, is simply astounding, and the lack of comment that it's generating is pretty astounding. You know, in the last Likud primaries, Olmert was not a top candidate to succeed Sharon. But because of the last summer, specifically last August's disengagement from Gaza, Olmert became Sharon's favorite, really just last summer, for his very public support of this disengagement. As a result, when all of the Likud, the people who today form the Likud, left the government, which at the time was the Likud government, Olmert became deputy prime minister almost on a fluke. And the fact that he's, as of today, the legally elected prime minister of Israel is remarkable. It's unprecedented in this country.
Noga, one final question. I want to get back to the Palestinian Authority on this one. I'm proud to say that Canada was actually the first country in the West that cut off all aid to Hamas under the Harper government. Did the EU decision yesterday to cut off aid, did that cause any surprise? Because the EU doesn't usually move on these kind of questions that where we have violent groups that are committed to the destruction of Israel. Did that cause any influence at all in that region?
Well, I think it may be at the root of this kind of frightened shock statement we saw today on the part of the Palestinian Minister of Finance, saying our situation is much worse than he realized. It's unclear, Beryl, where this is going to lead. On the one hand, of course, there's sort of a natural instinct to want to see terror movements cut off financially. On the other hand, the problem that the West and Israel is facing with Hamas is extremely complicated because they were legitimately elected in democratic elections supported by the West, and because, for example, if the funding, in order for chaos, total chaos not to ensue, if Iran and or Saudi Arabia step in as financial supporters, which seems to be what's coming up, it's not clear that this is going to benefit Israel. Having Iranian influence 20 minutes from my home, Jerusalem, is not an obvious
thing. Does not make you sleep well at night, although Iran has been funding Hamas anyway. But the 140,000 workers that have to get paid this week, somebody didn't get a memo in Tehran to send the check.
Right. That's what I'm saying. It's very complicated. Israel, of course, publicly, and I think in many cases privately, is very pleased by the European decision and certainly has supported the American decision. On the other hand, what these decisions may mean for us remains completely unclear.
Now, you sensitized us to the last time we were talking after the Hamas election to the 700,000 workers that cross over each morning. How is that impacting? What's the impact on the ground in that particular sense?
So far, there aren't changes. It's a really interesting question. You have here a sort of earthquake with no aftershocks so far, in part because it took so long for the Palestinian government to actually take over. But You had the Hamas election, which is an earthquake by any standard.
Right.
And so far, until the last few days, which has been, you know, a significant number of weeks, you haven't seen many actual reactions on the ground. The same number of workers keep coming over so far. There have been some kind of unfortunate interactions. A Hamas minister somehow got into Jerusalem. He claimed that since he was a minister, he had the right to go wherever the hell he wanted. The Israelis arrested him. He was released after 6 hours. These types of incidents, slightly embarrassing for everyone, have occurred. But basically, in terms of everybody's day-to-day life, there have not yet been major changes. For the Palestinian population, it may be more noticeable. For example, this may seem to a superfluous detail, but I found it interesting that 2 days ago Hamas announced they're going to make public belly dancing shows illegal.
Well, that's a start for progress.
Well, this made me laugh because some friends of mine in Ramallah, very liberal, very progressive Palestinian friends of mine.
And most of the Palestinian population is secular.
Completely secular,
more
right.
More than almost any other Arab population in the Middle East.
Correct, and also more educated than any Arab population in the Middle East. So the night of the Hamas election, some friends of mine in Ramallah made a kind of ironic jokes about how soon they're going to have to come into Tel Aviv just to see a belly dancing show, and we all chuckled about it. But 2 days ago, this announcement was made. So, for example, things could implode non-financially and have nothing to do with Israel if the Hamas government tries to move too quickly to Islamicize what is basically a secular population.
Noga Turner-Polsky, we thank you for joining us on a Sunday from Jerusalem, and let's hope we see more belly dancing and less bullets.
Thank you,
thank
Noga.
You.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care. Montreal will be right back after we pay some bills with David Harris, former deputy director of CSIS. And Montreal, welcome back. An email, Beryl and Rick, at info@iapm.ca. I want to welcome David Harris. And David, I want to thank you for joining us at the last minute. David Harris is former deputy director of CSIS for Priorities and Planning and president of Insignia Strategic Research in Ottawa. And I asked David to come on at the last moment because we've been talking with Noga Turner-Polsky about the importance of the Middle East. We understand the importance of the Middle East economically to us as far as oil. But with David, I wanted to talk about the importance of our mission in Afghanistan because it's all part of the same thing. We want to secure ourselves economically. We also have to secure ourselves militarily. The fight has to be taken there. Secretary of State for Defense John Reid, the British Secretary of State for Defense, is making a tour of North America, and he wrote in an op-ed that went around the continent, and I want David to comment on this. I just want to read very briefly. Yes, the Taliban regime has fallen, but that is not enough. To ensure that they can never return, never again allow Al-Qaeda free reign to plot murder. We must help Afghanistan put something different and better in its place, something that benefits all the Afghan people. In short, we must help to rebuild Afghanistan, one of the poorest countries in the world, as a prosperous, democratic, stable, and secure country. It helps them. It protects us. David Harris, welcome. What do you think of what he said?
Well, Beryl, quick adjustment. You gave me a kind of retroactive promotion. I was Chief of Strategic Planning at CSIS, but getting on to business, yes, I think he's bang on this. It may be desirable, of course, to look for ideals like democracy and so on, but at the very least, it's vitally important that we disrupt the enemy abroad before they really get to consolidate in our own backyard.
The top levels of the Harper government get this. Do the bureaucrats of foreign affairs?
Not at all clear. Not at all clear. There is some concern one hears increasingly that there may be people who are particularly soft on the radicalism of some of the Palestine elements, even within our own foreign affairs ministry. And it was tremendously interesting hearing Noga providing the update. Let me just, if I may, Beryl, for listeners, to give them a real sense of what we're dealing with when we talk about radical Islam as it manifests itself in Hamas. Let me invite people to just take a moment to look at the Hamas charter. We hear a lot about this, but nobody ever gets around to actually looking at the thing. And it's got to be looked at for people to understand the kinds of beasts we're dealing with in terms of radical Islamic ideology. If you go to Article 7 of the charter, now you just think about our Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Well, this is how part...
And Section 7 of our charter is the Fundamental Justice Clause.
That's right, that's right. So listen to this. This is the charter of Hamas. It says that Hamas has been looking forward to implement Allah's promise, whatever time it might take. The prophet, prayer and peace be upon him, said,
the time will not come until Muslims will fight the Jews and kill them, until the Jews hide behind rocks and trees, which will cry, "O Muslim, there is a Jew hiding behind me, come on and kill him." This will not apply to the Garkad, which is a Jewish tree. Now, this is simply one element of what would ordinarily be considered a near psychotic document. But this, my friends, is, of course, a charter of the now the Palestinian Authority.
And we have a lot of reflection of this in Al-Qaeda's writings, in the Wahhabi clerical establishment of Saudi Arabia, the calls for restoration of Islamic hegemony of the 14th century. But the West doesn't be, or the mass of ordinary citizens in the West don't seem to be taken seriously. Should they be?
Well, absolutely. I mean, this is absolutely brilliant.
So when these groups say we want Islamic hegemony, they aren't kidding.
Oh, they're not kidding at all.
This isn't fringe.
They've been refreshingly, if perversely, honest about these things. But I guess the rest of us, of course, have not been conditioned to realize that people could be serious about this. I mean, as you've noted, we've got Iran now working on a military nuclear program, and we have been told in any number of ways and respects that these bombs, these weapons, will be used. And yet it's very difficult for us to contemplate such a thing.
In other words, the message is, Canada, pay attention. These guys mean what they say.
And we have got these guys amongst us here in Canada.
And listen to tomorrow night's debate on whether or not we got the nerve to stay the game.
You bet.
David Harris, many thanks for taking the time on Last Minute. Montreal, thanks very much. Again, info@iapm.ca. Thank you, Chris Smith, our operator. Thank you, Val Prudnikoff, producer. Rick, good job.
Keep up
Montreal,
good
we'll see you next week.